Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of our society. To those who know that the world's political, the world's religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. For those who recognize that the single most important thing we can do is to expose and condemn them, even when they're religions. It isn't hateful, it's caring. Perhaps the wisest man that I have had the opportunity to encounter, certainly the most courageous, I think also the most compassionate individual as it relates to the single greatest threat against humanity today, which is the religion of Islam, is IQ Al-Rasuli. IQ, it's my pleasure to have you back on the program. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
IQ is the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. It's available just by Googling it or by searching for it at Amazon. The only difference between IQ's review of Islam and my own is that I organized the Islamic source material chronologically, and IQ has arranged it topically. I think actually when it comes to understanding a religion's perverse activities, the topical arrangement is more effective. And so I would strongly encourage folks to examine his book. IQ, there's a story out of Egypt, where a number of women are complaining that no matter how they are dressed, even if they're wearing the Islamic tent where only their eyes are visible, that they're being raped by Muslim men. Matter of fact, the current surveys in Egypt say that not only are 99% of Muslim girls butchered by their parents with female mutilation, but as adults, 98% of Egyptian women are savaged sexually by adult Muslim men. When you have those kind of numbers, what's the world to do?
Condemn them, but nobody is doing so.
How can there be? How can there be women's rights organizations, and you're dealing with 125 million Muslim girls that are being butchered by Muslim parents, and you have 98% of the. In fact, it's up now. The most recent poll is 99.3 of Egyptian women have been sexually harassed. How can the world even tolerate this? How can the world go on and be fixated over Crimea, for crying out loud, and not care that 99.3% of a population is being sexually harassed?
By the way, nobody is asking why.
Yeah, I know. So that's the problem.
It's really important to know why those men are so perverted.
Right.
It's really important.
And it's important to understand why the women can't get relief even after they have been raped, and why the men are almost never condemned when it has been proven that they committed a rape.
Well, there are so many questions. You know the answer. I know the answer. It's not hidden. Agenda. Anybody who reads the Quran would know the answer, and yet nobody is doing anything.
In fact, I think it's worse than that.
You said they're more concerned with Crimea.
I think it even gets worse than that, IQ. When you had Barack Hussein Obama go to Cairo and give a speech at the birthplace of the Muslim Brotherhood, talking about how great Islam is, when Islam alone, not a corruption of the religion as it was lived by Muhammad, is responsible for mutilating 125 million little girls, for murdering tens of thousands in honor killings, and perpetrating sexual abuse on 99.3% of the female population in Egypt, and you speak favoratively, positively about such a religion? I mean, it's grotesquely immoral.
Yes, so he talked garbage when he talked in Cairo. He lied. He lied. Because, as I said once before, I wrote an article which was published rebutting every single item he mentioned about Islam. Islam never contributed anything to humanity which was positive. Everything negative has been produced by Islam.
Would you mind on our next program, what I would love for you to do? I'd love for you to present that article the next time we're together a week from today. I think it is important because it's not just that the world is ignorant of Islam. It's not just that the world doesn't want to acknowledge how massive this problem is, how savage and how perverse the problem is. We have politicians and the media and academics actually promoting the most merciless religion and political mantra that has ever been conceived by man.
Believe it or not, they have been bought. Millions of dollars have been showered upon these people to act the way they are acting. I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah, it's true.
The Saudi government gives millions, tens of millions of dollars to universities in America and in Europe. Tens of millions of dollars to educate about Islam in a positive manner.
Correct.
Buy people. They buy people. And they are, and there are people who are willing to be sold. I mean, to be bought.
Yeah, universities aren't cheap. They typically get millions of dollars in grant aid from the Saudis to make certain that they toe the line and speak favoratively of Islam. We did a story yesterday, IQ, that was along these lines. Ali is a woman who was scheduled to receive an honorary doctorate for her work, which is very courageous, where she speaks out on behalf of these 125 million Muslim girls who've been mutilated by their parents. And she did not receive the honorary doctorate because the professors at the university and the students, bowing to pressure from care, voted to rescind it and not even let her voice be heard. And it is, in their particular case, they were bought cheap.
What I can't understand, how is it possible for care to get away with it? What I can't understand, honestly, I mean, really, I can't. You're an American. I'm not an American, so maybe you know the rules better than I. I would decimate care in any court of law, and you would do exactly the same thing in less than 10 minutes.
I've done so. I've debated Ibrahim Hooper.
How is it possible for a university? And I think you're talking about Brandeis University. I know about the subject.
Yes.
I keep track of all these things. I keep track, although they are in America, thousands of miles away from me.
You know, here in this story that I'm sure you're aware of, CNN has published it, and it talks about woman after woman in Egypt who was sexually attacked by mobs of fundamentalist Muslims. And they talk about seeking protection, you know, going into a pharmacy and seeking protection. And everyone in the pharmacy says, no, we don't want you in here. You go out and you deal with them. And having the police say, it's the women's fault they brought this on themselves. Even in the universities where the a child has to hide in the bathroom and barricade the door to keep the boys from raping her, the principal will say, it's her fault. It's not the boy's fault. And in a country like that, the CNN article presents the story. Do you know how many times they mentioned Islam as the source of the problem?
Not once.
Not once.
Yes, and I haven't even seen the article. I know.
Yeah, not
I
once.
I know how the Western media pervert everything. I know.
Yeah, here's what Muhammad had to say about women in his farewell sermon. This is the last statement that's recorded to Muhammad. Allah permits you to shut women in separate rooms and to beat them. If they abstain, they have the right to some food and clothing. Women are like domesticated animals, and they possess nothing themselves. Allah made women, their bodies, enjoyment of their bodies, I should say, lawful in his Quran. In Quran 4:11, it says, Allah directs you to regard the children's inheritance to the man a portion equal to that of two females. These are the settled portions ordained by Allah. In other words, that a woman is worth half that of a man. So in Bukhari, we read, the prophet said, I was shown the hellfire, and the majority of its dwellers were women who were disbelievers or ungrateful. When asked what they were ungrateful for, the prophet said, all the favors that were done for them by their husbands. The next Muslim hadith. Oh, women folk, you should ask for forgiveness, for I saw you in bulk among the dwellers of hell. A wise lady said, "Why is it, Allah's apostle, that women compose the bulk of the inhabitants of hell?" The prophet observed, "You curse too much and you are ungrateful to your spouses. You lack common sense. You fail in religion and you rob the wisdom of the wise." Upon this, the woman remarked, "What's wrong with our common sense?" The prophet replied, "Your lack of common sense can be demonstrated from the fact that the evidence of two women is equal to that of one man. That is proof."
Well, you missed the following two, which are more important, with all due respect.
Okay.
Sahih al-Bukhari, Hadith 7.33, narrated by Osama bin Zayd, the Prophet said, "After me, I have not left any affliction more harmful to men than women." By the way, the most accurate appraisal of women in Muhammadan Islam is one found in Mishkat al-Masabih, Volume 2, page 692, by Walid al-Din Abu Abdullah Muhammad al-Tabrizi. And it says, "A woman is like a vagina. When she goes out, the devil casts a glance at her." That is why women in Muhammadan Islam have to be covered from head to toe, because every square inch of their body is like a genital, which would arouse the uncontrollable sexual desires of the Muhammadan males. Have you heard that one, by the way?
Yeah, it's just repulsive, isn't it?
But, it is repulsive.
And that's really, you know, in Islam. A woman exists for two reasons in Islam: to appease the carnal desires of men, and Muhammad recognized that men will fight and kill if he could promise them unending supply of sex. And so what Muhammad did is that every time, and there were 77 terrorist raids that were motivated and led by Muhammad in the first 10 years of the Islamic era, every time his Muslim mujahideen would terrorize a community, Muhammad allowed them to cast lots to choose which women they got to rape. And he promised the ones that got killed in the terrorist raid that they would get to perpetually rape countless virgins in paradise. You know, Muhammad turned women into plunder. And that is why Islam ultimately grew. He gave them total dominion over women. To savage, to mistreat, to rape, to commit acts of pedophilia, to commit incest, to do whatever they wish to do. And the world doesn't speak out against this horror. What's wrong with us? Welcome back to Shattering Myths. It's an interesting perspective on Islam. The Quran says in 4:15, "If any of your women are guilty of lewdness, take evidence of four witnesses against them. If they testify, confine them to houses until death by starvation claims them." Then in Quran 24:6, and it says, "And for those who launch such a charge against their wives, accusing them, but don't have any witnesses and don't have any evidence except their own testimony, let the testimony of the one be equivalent to four testimonies, swearing four times by Allah that he is the one telling the truth," which ends up with a woman dying, starving to death. It is a lovely religion, and that's directly from the Quran.
Well,
why does the world trust such a religion? Why would the President of the United States quote from such a book?
Because he's a Muslim.
Certainly acts like one, doesn't he?
I don't want us to argue about it. He is a Muslim. 100%. Doesn't matter what he says that he's a Christian. Who baptized him, by the way? I mean, to become a Christian, you've got to be baptized.
You don't have to be baptized to be a Christian.
Oh,
Christian religion is almost as screwed up as Islam, except it's not as violent, obviously, and it's sexist. In Christianity, Paul writes that men lord over women, and that husbands, you know, are the lords of their wives. So it is Christianity, because of Paul's poison pen, is sexist, it's mean-spirited, it's anti-Semitic. So Christianity has lots of flaws. It's just that in Christianity, there is no constant motivation for Christians to go off and savage girls. In fact, it's viewed inappropriately to sexually harass women in Christianity, and it's inappropriate in Christianity to go off and kill. So, Christianity screwed up. And all it takes to be a Christian is to make a declaration of faith. The fact of the matter is that it is a screwed up religion that's just not nearly as lethal. It's not nearly as repulsive. It's not nearly as sexist as is Islam. Islam's just the worst. Whether you want to call it a religion, whether you want to call it a dogma, whether you want to call it a political scheme, no matter what you want to call it, it's the worst dogma belief ever conceived in the human mind.
By the way, before the interruption of the when we discuss, you asked the question, what's happening? Why isn't anybody saying anything? I'll tell you why.
What's wrong with us?
For the last 70 years, both in Europe and America, the public, new generations have been dumbed down to be secularists. Not to believe in God, not to believe in morality, not to believe in justice, but to believe in themselves and only themselves. Well, humans cannot, without rule of law, without morality, without justice, humans are the worst savages.
Yeah, I'm going to take a slightly different view of that, but you did ask the question, and you are correct in that it is the promotion of what has become the religion of the West. I speak of it often as the national religion of the American political system, the American media, and of American academia, which is socialist secular humanism. But it is true that it is also the religion of Europe. It is the religion of the West. It is the religion of academia outside of the Islamic world. It's the religion of the media outside of the Islamic world. It is the religion of academia outside of the Islamic world. Socialist secular humanism. The primary goal of socialist secular humanism is to eliminate the exercise of good judgment. Being able to render a rational verdict, to be able to tell right from wrong, good from bad, is what is spoken of most harshly in political correctness, which is the moral code of this worldwide imposed religion. And what it has done is it's dumbed down people so that they are no longer capable of rendering a rational, moral, logical conclusion to the evidence. So you can present all the evidence in the world. You and I can quote out of the Quran and out of the Hadith. We can provide evidence that little girls are being mutilated by the tens of millions. And a person who has been indoctrinated in a academic institution today in the West is incapable of processing it.
I agree with you totally. And I like your date. Your explanation is much better than mine, that's for sure.
No, it is the single biggest battle we fight, IQ. It's the reason why, even in debates against Muslims, in substance, we overwhelm them. They don't have a leg to stand on. They are awesomely vulnerable. But substance doesn't prevail in the minds of the irrational anymore, particularly among those who have been indoctrinated and are ignorant. So the challenge is a big one that we face, but it's an important one. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with IQ Al-Rasuli, the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. IQ, Muhammad said, never trust a woman. So when a woman is raped and she says, this man raped me, and the man says to a judge that, she asked for it. Since Muhammad said, never trust a woman, since the Quran says that the testimony of a man is valid and the testimony of a woman is invalid, what hope is there for the woman?
No hope whatsoever. By the way, it's very interesting because you see, you addressed the Quran or Muhammad, as you said, from the Hadith in chronological order.
Right.
Let me ask you a question. And this 4.34, you quoted it a few seconds ago. It says,
yes,
men are the protectors and maintainers of women.
Yes.
You know who said that? Muhammad said that.
Yeah.
But Muhammad was maintained by Khadija, his wife.
Correct.
He didn't maintain her. She Correct. Was the one who maintained him all his life.
Correct.
Yeah, but very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Purely hypocritical, isn't it?
Absolutely. All his life, it was Khadija. Without Khadija, there would have been no Islam.
Correct.
Without Khadija, Muhammad would have been a piece of garbage from the sides of the desert, and nobody would have heard about him. He's still a piece of garbage, but they have heard about him.
Yes, and the reason is because Muhammad was out being a pagan. He was out doing fasting rituals that were part of the pagan religion of associated with the Kaaba and Mecca. And he was out in a cave one night, and Satan came to him. And Satan did the same thing to him that Satan did to Paul on the road to Damascus, nearly kicked the life out of him, abused him badly. And Muhammad was scared to death. And at first, the revelation from Satan was as foolish as was the revelation from Satan to Paul. And so scared to death, Muhammad's first instinct was to commit suicide. And he was too big of a weasel to even take his own life. So he ran home to Khadija, and the first thing that he says is, I have been demon-possessed. I am scared to death. He knew it. He admitted it. And she was the one that says, no, I've spent too much money on you, and my social status is based upon my my marriage to you, so I'm not buying that for a second. This is the story, and the story is, you weren't demon-possessed. You didn't meet with Satan. No, you met with Allah, and Allah has chosen you to be his messenger. This is the story, and you're going to stick to that story. That's what happened. That's what the hadith itself explains.
Yes, but he perverted it. She was the one who made him, literally single-handed, without Khadija, no Muhammad, without Khadija, no Islam.
Yeah, so she turned on women.
He
turned on women. Right, and what's the first thing that he did? He saw to it that that she met with a premature demise, and once that occurred, the first thing that he did, I mean, within moments of the time, and maybe even before the time, he started having sex with a six-year-old girl.
Correct.
His best friend's daughter.
The Muslims will tell you again and again and again, if you look at him, you Google, that he loved Khadija. Not true.
Not true. Yeah, there's no indication of that whatsoever.
Because she dominated him.
That's correct.
Because she was the breadwinner, not him.
He hated all women, which is why when you read when you read the Quran and you put the Quran in chronological order and you do so using the hadith so that you have a basis for the context of Muhammad's life as the Quran is being revealed, it becomes apparent that Muhammad began to hate women because of his mother. His mother abandoned him and gave him over to a Bedouin woman who tortured him. And he describes the tortures that he endured. And his tortures in hell are the very tortures that he endured because she wasn't paid sufficiently to take him. He was the last choice. And so he hated his mother. And he took out his treatment at the hands of the Bedouin woman, the abuse. He suffered abuse as a child, and he took it out against every woman, which is why his idea of paradise is to be able to conquer women, to have total control over women. And so it was this rage against women that motivated him to create Islam. I mean, now, does that help our listeners? Perhaps. You know, sometimes in a world today where substance doesn't resonate with most people, where evidence and reason doesn't prevail anymore, sometimes just providing what was the motivation for Muhammad to create the lie that is Islam. And if you really want to get right down to the kernel of it, it's Muhammad was abused as a child, and he came to hate women as a result of that, and he created Islam to satiate his hatred for women. And you might say, well, then why would he have a harem with up to 24 little girls and women, mostly slaves, in his harem? Because he had total control over them. He could abuse them any way he wanted. That's why. A pedophile, when you're a pedophile, you don't love little girls. You want absolute control over them. You're abusing them. When you commit incest, it's not because you love your family. When you commit rape, it's not an act of love. And Muhammad was a repeated rapist, pedophile, and he was incestuous. He hated women.
Yeah, and he literally, for 1400 years, bequeathed to humanity and the females of the human species the worst scripture ever.
Ever. Oh, yeah. Ever. I mean, Christianity is bad for women. But I'm going to tell you, there is nothing in this world worse for women than Islam. It exists to make women nothing more than physical bodies to be controlled by and abused by men. That's one of the reasons why in Islam and in Egypt, for example, 99% of Muslim little girls are sexually mutilated by their mothers. So that they can never enjoy sex, because it isn't for them to have pleasure in a loving relationship. It's for them to be an object. And, you know, I can tell you that if my wife and I have an intimate moment, if when that occurs and my wife isn't pleasured by it, if that isn't part of the equation, then it's not a pleasurable experience. I mean, the bottom line, I don't want to get graphic here, but in a moral male's mind, there is no pleasure in an intimate embrace unless the pleasure is mutual.
Absolutely.
But in a Muslim mind, there is no concept of love. The Quran and Islam are totally deprived of the concept of love. I think the word love only appears twice, and it's so disingenuous that you could say, in essence, that Islam is a religion totally deprived of the concept of love.
In fact, they have no concept of love, because as you said, the Quran, I have checked the Quran, for 30 years, there is not a single instance in which there is a love between Allah and his slaves.
No, of course not.
Or between slaves and other people, or between people and other people.
That's
the
true.
Word or the concept of love does not appear anywhere in the Quran or the Hadith.
Yeah, I thought there were two mentions. I think there's two mentions of it, but I'm going to acquiesce to your expertise here, because the two mentions that I thought existed, and I'm admitting here that I'm errant, were such that they had no relation whatsoever between the relationship between man and God or between humans.
None whatsoever.
None whatsoever.
I would like our listeners to know something. The women before Muhammad of Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
The women, what they call it, the days of Jahiliyyah, means the
days of ignorance.
Of ignorance.
Right.
They always called anything before Islam
right. Ignorance.
But in reality, women of Arabia in the Jahiliyyah, in the days of ignorance, before Muhammad, had infinitely, and I repeat the word, infinitely more freedom than after Muhammad. In fact, they were so free. Women used to go running around the Kaaba, the holiest place of pagan Arabia, completely naked, and nobody touched them.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the very proof of this is the wealthiest individual in Mecca at the time of Muhammad was a woman, the woman that he ended up marrying, Khadija. Yeah, absolutely. One of the things true that changes in Islam is that I have searched Roman, I've searched Greek, I've searched Persian, I've searched Egyptian, I've searched Median, I've searched Hittite, and I've searched Canaanite, as well as Hebrew histories. I can't find a single case, one documented case, where Arabs living in Arabia acted like barbarians, where they were savages, where they lashed out at neighboring countries to butcher them for booty. I can't find a single evidenced case in any of the histories of the literate people around Arabia. Now, I can't look at Arabia. The reason I can't look at Arabia, there was no written language in Arabia until the 7th century. So I can't look at Arabia before Islam because there was no capability of writing. But I looked at all those other cultures. There is a single case of Arabs prior to Islam being warriors, being jihadists, being savages. Muhammad creates Islam, and within the first 10 years of the Islamic era, there are 75 documented terrorist raids, and they are brutal. The men are killed, the children are sold into slavery, the women are raped, all property is confiscated. What changed Arabs if it wasn't for Muhammad and Islam?
By the way, you haven't made it very clear that these raids were against civilians who were unprotected, who were not even prepared to fight, completely devoid of any defense.
In fact, let's go one step further, because you're correct, and it's an important point. Muslims will say that Muhammad fought against the armies as a general to protect Muslims. But did Muhammad ever once fight against an army?
Never. Not once.
Did Muhammad ever take the defensive, or was he always on the offensive?
Always on the offensive, except at Uhud.
Yeah, but even then, the reason he had to be on the defensive at that time is that he had led so many aggressive terrorist raids against Mecca that the Meccans finally said, we've got to stop this guy. All he's doing is kidnapping and enslaving and raping and robbing. We need to go stop him. So even it wasn't a defensive battle. Not really. Welcome back to Shatteringness. I understand that for most who have been indoctrinated in Western educational establishments, that evidence and reason don't apply. But for anyone who looks at the Islamic scriptures, which are comprised of the Quran and Hadith, it is undeniable that Islam is extraordinarily condemning of women and is authorized to perpetrate violence against women. And all you have to do is look at history, today's reality, and you know that there are over 125 million Muslim little girls that have been savaged by their parents. And tens of thousands are killed every year in honor killings in the name of Islam. But you know, savagery against women isn't the only problem in Islam, and that's what we have been moving towards, IQ. Islam is equally savage against men. Could you share with our listeners the cause an effect of Islam's first battle? Was it a defensive battle at Badr where Muslims were being attacked, or were they the aggressors, and what was the object?
The objective was to attack a caravan of the Quraysh, so-called pagan Arabs. By the way, the Quraysh was the tribe, the same tribe as Muhammad,
right,
to plunder them.
Right.
That's the only reason.
That was the only reason. Right. And so Muhammad came with the first Muslims. They were armed. And was a caravan a business enterprise or was it a military enterprise?
100% business enterprise.
Okay. So these are just businessmen out there trying to earn a living. And they were attacked by the first Muslims carrying weapons. And they were ravaged, weren't they?
Each and every one of them. Many of the leaders of the Quraysh, the top echelon of the Quraysh, were literally butchered that day, and their bodies were mutilated.
As a matter of fact, Muhammad even gloated over the mutilation of the of his tribesmen, the businessmen, people who were out trying to earn a living.
Right.
And Right, and it was the stealing of that of the property that belonged to the others that he used to finance Islam, correct?
Correct.
And doesn't the eighth surah of the Quran, which memorializes this, begin by saying that stealing is lawful and good?
The eighth surah is called Al-Anfal. Right. Anfal means plunder.
Right. So, and it begins by saying that plunder is lawful and good. Yeah. So Muhammad's God conveniently came up with a Quran revelation that said this bad behavior of terrorizing a civilian enterprise and robbing them and murdering them was really a good thing.
Absolutely. Because Allah is not Allah. Allah is not God. Allah is Muhammad. Every letter, every word, every verse, every chapter in the Quran are the product of Muhammad's imagination.
So why would anyone in their right mind promote this religion? Why would CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, get a voice in academia today with a religion that is this obviously perverse, this violent towards women and this violent towards men?
I can't answer you. You're an American. I can't answer you. It's beyond my comprehension that America, one of the greatest countries on the planet, with the greatest number of excellent lawyers, cannot take care and destroy them completely in a court of law. I can't understand it. I'm sorry.
But you know, you live, while you were born in Iraqi, you live in England. I can't see why where England is doing a better job. In fact, it appears to me that England, when you had a murder that was caught on film where the perpetrator was screaming Allahu Akbar and justifying sawing off a man's head in a public street, that your prime minister came right out immediately and said this has no connection whatsoever to Islam.
Yeah, yes.
He did.
And I would have liked to meet him and slap him on the face to wake him up.
Oh, you know, what do you do with somebody that has a public office and is this stupid? You know, naivete, being ignorant, is never an excuse, ever.
Yeah, but
when you run for politics...
Naivete.
Yeah, but when you're in politics, that's true. It's true. But even if you were to justify it, if someone is in a political situation where they have deployed troops, their own citizens, to combat Islamic terrorism and can't speak honestly about Islamic terrorism, then when their soldiers die, that person's a murderer. They're just a common murderer.
That's exactly what I'm saying. They are complicit in murdering
their own countrymen.
Their own public.
That is correct. Thank you, IQ Arasuli. More people need to listen to what you have to say.